Welcome to an arousing edition of The Work. Mm-hmm. I'm Ryan Basham, our engineer, producer, and hey sayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And here's your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Hey, that's me. Thanks for joining us for episode 13 of The Work. Holy cow, 13 episodes, and today is March 28th. Of 2011. This will be our last podcast of the month of March. Oh my God, we made it a quarter.
A quarter.
Whee!
Wow.
Yay us. I'm super, super excited because this week in the studio here at somebody's basement, we have the lovely, the talented, the rock star famous Lindsay Hollister.
Yay! She's been paid to say that.
No, it's Hi. True. It's true. You were famous way before I knew you. I'm so lucky.
Not only is she famous, she decided that our word for the week was going to be arousing.
Arousing.
Yes, that's all because of you, baby.
Arousing.
Woo, so I'm looking forward to our time together, Lindsay. Let's go right into Ryan and some news in the industry.
Well, The Hollywood Reporter reports that another Spider-Man actress has been sidelined after an onstage injury. TV Kapoor, who replaced Natalie Mendoza in the role of
Arachne,
whatever, is the fifth person to be hurt since last fall.
That makes me nervous.
Me too.
That's like a cursed show. Like we said last week, that's the new Macbeth.
But really, it's an understudy's dream. You have to think of that way.
Because they're going to get...
Because you're going to do the show.
Ouch.
I would want to understudy the show in a heartbeat.
You can put lead on your resume.
Exactly.
For sure.
Until you're in the hospital.
Fourth understudy to lead in like a week. And then the hospital. But your resume's forever.
You're excellent point, Lindsay.
So is death.
Ouch. So I've got a news item I want to bring up to you, Ryan. I don't know if you saw this, but I was playing Words with Friends on my iPad, and I noticed an ad scrolling across this weekend, and it says available on iTunes for $9.99 before it's in theaters on April 29th. It is 13 Assassins, a classic samurai film, according to The Hollywood Reporter. You can rent it now, but it will be in theaters April 29th. And this is Takashi Miike.
Yes.
Am I saying that correctly? My Japanese consultant, Keith Johnson?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Cinema Blend is calling it a slash-tastic new film. It had some leverage at the film festivals around. It did some South by Southwest, and so it's been around already this spring. But it's now going to have what looks like a pre-release
release?
Rentability.
Wow.
Through iTunes, and then go nationwide to cinema. It seems so strange to me, and I tried to find news. I tried to find anywhere Googling that there was information about this being done and this as a trend, and I'm not finding anybody talking about this, but I think it really is exactly what we talked about coming, which is the convergence of concurrent release, you know, that there will be something going to cinema and DVD simultaneously.
Sure, and it's, I would like to dig in a little bit deeper and find out, was this film thought not to be going anywhere, and as a result they made a deal with iTunes to just go ahead and release it for rental, and then it played at a film festival and somebody said, I'll distribute that.
Quite possibly. That's what I was looking for online. I couldn't find anything about it.
I wonder what the mechanism is.
But this is definitely something to watch, because this goes back to that whole Wild West times is changing thing.
Sure, indeed.
I will not be seeing this movie. Keith, will you?
Yes, definitely. In theaters and probably on iTunes.
Well, then we'll hear back from Keith.
Wow.
Same time.
I'm expecting a review.
I'm going to take my iPad into the theater.
Same time.
Have my rental and watch it and see if I can get it to sync up perfectly. And
that guy.
Yes.
You, if anybody would do it, that would be you.
Well,
if anybody does that, I need you to take video of your iPhone in the theater.
I don't think they let
you do
that.
Of the iPad. Of the iPad playing at the same time as you're in the theater.
I bet you'll find that there's minor changes between the edits in the theater and the edit on iTunes. I bet there are.
It'll be interesting to find out, and I will report back when I'm done.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, so we've been talking a lot about Netflix and the evolution thereof, and some interesting stuff has been happening. The LA Times is reporting that Showtime is working on a new deal with Netflix that excludes their first-run original stuff like Dexter and Californication. So the currently airing first-run series won't be in their new deal, won't be on Netflix anymore. And when this came out, the spokesperson for Netflix said they were surprised. So Netflix didn't even know that this was Showtime's position. And so now Netflix is saying, well, maybe we just don't need Showtime stuff altogether.
This is going to be a very interesting chess game.
It is. Yeah. It is. And Starz is doing something similar. Same parent company. They're delaying all of their original content for 90 days, starting with Camelot. And the same thing will eventually happen with all the films that go to Netflix via Starz. But Starz is a huge partner for Netflix.
This is a little similar to the net neutrality argument we talked about last week and, you know, creating a bottleneck of delivery of certain product based on who you choose to use as your viewing mechanism.
Trust busting will happen. It will happen. So on the flip side, the LA Times is also reporting that Miramax is in talks with Netflix, Google, Hulu, and others for a distribution deal of its 700 film library online. So nothing has been reached, but a deal would likely exceed $100 million. Isn't that phenomenal?
That's pretty awesome.
So maybe Netflix will grab onto that one.
Hmm.
I think we should also probably talk about the LA Web Fest.
Oh, I would love to just absolutely do a shout out to Somebody's Basement Premiere Content, Betty and Dee Dee, which
Yay.
Won awards at the LA Web Fest this past weekend, which is badass.
Congratulations.
And also, several friends to Cricket Feed and Somebody's Basement had web series that did very well at the LA Web Fest, and we are just so excited to see that happening and celebrate self-produced content and all these actors out there not waiting for stuff to happen and just shooting shit.
Not shooting these shit.
Right.
A series that I was in was in the LA Web Series.
Oh, I thought you were like stuttering.
The Unemployment of Danny London. Shout out, guys. Woo!
I didn't even know you were in that until Sean tweeted me. Sean, who is the producer of Betty and Dee Dee, tweeted me that he saw you in a movie at the festival, and I'm like, I didn't even know he was in that.
I was in the opening scene of the pilot. I'm awesome.
Okay, and that's the news.
Awesome. Look, and I'm glad we're done with this.
You'll
stuff
notice Lindsay kept her mouth shut the whole time.
Well, we're gonna fix that right now. Ah. We're gonna force Miss Lindsay Hollister to talk with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
So glad you're here. I was looking over your awesome bio, which of course is just riddled with amazing jobs that you've had, and I'm realizing that most everybody came to know you through Boston Public, but I didn't become aware of you until Popular.
Really?
Because I was not watching the Boston Public.
Good show, though.
Well, yes, it was a great show.
Yeah.
Actually has never been released to DVD, so...
Dude!
I don't know. I know. Someone needs to call David E. Kelly.
Yeah, we need to fix that. Boston Public, this is the one that you were in consideration for an Emmy, right?
Well, he did submit me for consideration. That doesn't mean that I was nominated.
But it
meant it was, yes, the submission. I received a letter from production asking me to sign off on that, if I was willing to allow him to do
well,
that.
Well, let me think about it. Am I willing?
Yes. I'll let that happen. Pretty amazing first job in town. I was Taff Hartlead through them.
Insane.
Yes, I've been in town for about a year. And I remember when I got the audition, I said to my agent, because it was for a guest star.
Yeah.
And we all know you don't start doing guest stars. Especially the fact Boston Public was a huge hit show in its first season.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of industry people were watching. And he said, well, they'll just have to Taft Hartley you, but you don't go into a job thinking that that's going to happen. And it did.
God, that's so cool.
I know, kids. Dreams do come true.
Yay.
Sometimes.
Well, so, and then let's talk about since then, because, you know, obviously, Strong Medicine, ER, any day now, things that people, like, just watch like crazy. And then probably my favorite role I've seen you in is on Nip Tuck. Because that one's just like chilling. Your performance is just so powerful. I saw it in a rerun recently and I just was bawling. I'm like, it's amazing.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's funny, when I booked Nip Tuck, it was the third episode of the first season, and no one had heard of the show, and there were several people who asked me if it was really a show about plastic surgery.
Right.
And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I'm an actor.
Right.
So people were confused.
And thinking like it's a reality show?
They thought it was a reality show. When I would say Nip Tuck, it's about plastic surgeons, they thought it was a reality show, which is so hard to imagine that people would be, yes. But that role was written for an older woman. It was supposed to be 30s to 40s, and at that time I was still playing high school, really.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Younger. And I wanted that role so badly. And it was one of those roles where I connected to this character regardless of age.
Yeah.
And that obviously came through in the session, because when they cast me, they had to actually change lines about her age. And I mean, that doesn't happen anymore.
I was gonna say, this is another example of dreams come true, kids. Mm-hmm. That these are things that you're told never, never happen.
They used to come true. No, I know, does that sound horrible? They still will, kids. Take the razor blade away from the wrist, it's okay. But no, I mean, I feel like people, it was happening a lot more in the early 2000s than it is now, because I use your phrase all the time, the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
Industry has changed. And I'm sure it does still happen sometimes, but it was one of those amazing moments when they called and said, you have the part, because I knew it was so rare to get that juicy
yeah.
of a role.
Yeah.
And Nip Tuck would be one of the things people recognize for me more than anything else.
Well, I wanted to ask, because as well as, you know, things like one of my favorites, Joan of Arcadia, you did Cold Case, yeah. Desperate Housewives, like shit that people watch all the time. What is the thing you're most recognized for as far as TV is concerned?
Definitely people recognize, first of all, a lot of people think they just know me or that I've been to the restaurants like yeah. the night before. I get that a lot. I'm like, no, I haven't been here. I don't know you. But I would say currently the projects people will recognize, Nip Tuck for mm-hmm. sure. Cold Case was another really great guest star. I think anywhere where I die, people remember death. People remember that more than anything.
That's reassuring.
Isn't it? I did My Name is Earl. People will yeah. remember My Name is Earl, which was a really funny role. Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, most of these shows are off the air, but they live on in reruns.
Yeah, thank God for syndication.
Exactly. I think like Law and Order Special Victims Unit, which I did in 2004, I want to say, it was a while ago, still re-airs. Like it was just yesterday. I think somebody last week said they saw it.
That's awesome.
So the residuals are like $5, but you know, yeah, it's nice because then it still makes you feel like you're on TV,
right?
Even if you're not.
No. Well, I remember we were at a restaurant together last year, and the waitress actually came and followed us outside as soon as she realized. Like, it was driving her nuts the whole time.
Right.
And then the moment she realized, she chased you outside and said, I remember, it was Nip Tuck, because she was so sure she knew you right. and couldn't figure out where. And I'm like, do people actually believe you're going to be relieved when they come up with what it is? Like, they have to tell you. You know?
I've been chased, like, through the DMV parking lot. Well, I have to say, the best story ever was, I did a movie in Croatia. I think we're going to talk about
it. We're going to talk about it.
Last year. I was there for a month filming, and then my fiancé met me in Germany, in Munich, because it's the only place he's ever wanted to go. He's a World War II buff, so we went to Dachau, which is a concentration camp that wow. is about 20 minutes outside of Munich. So we are taking... Can you see where this is going? So we are taking an English-speaking tour. It's like 2.5 hours. I thought I was going to be bored off my gourd, but our tour guide was actually quite captivating and was telling a lot of history that I didn't know. But we're moving through the camp, and it's a somber place, obviously.
Sure.
So much the tragedy of Beyond Tragedy happened there. And he let us go into the bunkers to see where the prisoners were actually kept. And I come outside, and he's speaking in very low terms. He was British, you know, so he's speaking very low terms to everybody. And from across the field, I hear, were you on Scrubs? So, yeah, it was an American with a Texas accent.
Awesome.
Everybody turns and stares at me. And it was another tour guide, an American tour guide working in Germany. And he was a huge Scrubs fan. And he comes across, and I'm like embarrassed, because I go, this is the last place you'd ever think that you'd recognize. We went on drinking that night. It was great.
At
the
serious?
Hopper House. We did. Yes.
Yeah, be careful saying that. You're going to have fans here in LA that are like, let's go drinking. I yeah. heard.
Well, we were in Germany.
Yes. Well, you can't not go out
when
with
in Rome.
Drinks for drinks with the tour guides at the Holocaust
yes.
Memorial
I
site.
I see where that
recognized you.
No, that's a gimme.
So, you know, I think that a lot of people, they think they know they recognize you, but they don't know how.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it's TV stuff. And I've done that, too, to other actors.
Sure.
I've seen, like, oh, hey, I know you from oh, no, you're on Gossip Girl, you know, or something like that, so.
But you feel like, yeah, we know each other. No, we were hanging out. You were just in my apartment. No,
right.
on TV in my apartment.
Exactly.
Right.
Really quick, another on the same subject, mm-hmm. as Dreams Do Come True, our casting being a little bit more creative back in the day, Joan of Arcadia was written for a 14-year-old boy. I was in the producer session with 14-year-old boys
and
their mothers and then me in the corner. And I booked that. And it turned into, I did 2 episodes. So, you know, it was a nice recurring thing. And then, of course, it was canceled prematurely.
Such a good show.
But again, like that rarely happens. But that was a really nice story.
Oh, well, now let's talk about the amazing film Blubberella. I remember when you booked this and talking about it and just going, really, what? What's and they're gonna do what? And you're gonna ride around on a Segway?
That came later.
Yeah, that was like bizarre.
Well, It was bizarre from beginning to end and still continues to be this strange saga. Entertainment Weekly, there happened to be a 4-page story with a 2-page cover spread. I know.
Girl.
I know. I was talking to Entertainment Weekly writers and I said, you can't be subtle about something like this. You can't be. You have to geek out about it. Well, what happened was, this movie really was the movie I didn't think anybody should ever see. Nor do I still think anybody should see it, yes.
But it sounds like you don't get a choice now. I think people are going to...
A little bit.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was, there's an infamous director named Uwe Boll.
And what would we know him for?
Uwe is known for making movie adaptations of video games. House of Dead, Blood Rain. If you are a gamer, you know him because you probably feel he's ruined your favorite games. He came out...
He actually ruined my favorite actor, Sir Ben Kingsley.
Ah.
He destroyed Sir Ben Kingsley for me.
Blood Rain.
I even bought Sir Ben Kingsley in Thunderbirds.
Right.
But Uwe Boll ruined him for me in Blood Rain.
Blood Rain.
Yeah.
Well, Blood Rain is a very popular video game about a woman who's half vampire, half human, naturally, like you do.
Yeah.
And she kills other vampires. And the movie actually, the first one, did have theatrical release in early 2000-something.
Very widespread.
Yes, and it bombed. But we're talking Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
We will put the sir in his name when we speak about this movie, even though he's in this movie.
Sure.
I guess I did hear somewhere that he did it because his granddaughter was a big vampire fan or something.
Hmm.
And that's why he did. But Michelle Rodriguez was in it. The Terminatrix, the girl who
Christina
played...
Loken.
Christina Loken played Blood Rain. Michael Madsen.
Sure.
There were names in it. And it did not do well. It was very widely panned.
Mm.
But he went on to do a second one that went straight to DVD. And then a third one. Wow. Now, the third one is supposedly the one that is closest to the video game, where she's in World War II fighting Nazi vampires.
Nazi vampires? Are
Nazi
you serious?
Nazi vampires.
It all ties back together.
Yes. Wow. I know. Because... You know, if you're going to fight Nazis, they should be vampires.
Absolutely.
Well, they were all vampires.
Exactly. Because, the first one took place in, the Renaissance. I can't remember. And the second one was the Wild Wild West. So this one is finally World War II.
Oh, okay. So she lives forever anyway.
She's immortal.
She's half vampire.
Well, she's part vampire.
So
half vampire. Oh, so I had done a very small role in another Uwe Boll film called Postal. It was a straight offer. I flew to Vancouver for the day. They paid me a ridiculous amount of money, and
I
played a secretary, and it was cool, whatever. So at the premiere for that, I had never really spoken that much to Uwe, which is interesting. I mean, I don't even remember speaking to him on set. They, funny enough, bringing it back to television, Uwe and his producers saw me on My Name is Earl.
Uh-huh.
And thought I was funny and brought me in to do Postal because it was this comedy that he was doing. So at the premiere, I went to say goodbye to him. He did a Q&A, which was completely incoherent. And he's going on about German gold and Nazi money and weird things. Because everybody wants to know how he funds his films. So I went to say goodbye quickly to him. And he said, I would love to do the German. I will do the German accent for you.
Oh, yay.
He goes, I have this idea for Blood Rain. You play Blood Rain. And maybe people go, ha, 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 but you kick ass.
Outstanding.
Yeah. I don't do that good of a job, but that's close
I think
to what it was.
Probably very close.
So all I could say was, call me, because I thought it was a great idea to do a video, to do a
hell yeah,
a spoof of a video game hero with a character actress as the lead. What happened is he eventually called. I thought I was going to shoot my own movie. He was piggybacking it on Blood Rain 3. Because of money,
mm-hmm.
Decided not to have anyone write a script, but thinking we could just pretty much come up with it.
Sure.
Yes.
Because that's what you're hired to do as an actor.
Exactly.
Just make it up.
Just, yeah, we can just improv that.
Wow. And
yeah. An entire 90-minute movie. Yes.
Out of the country. Excellent.
Miles and miles away from home.
Yeah. That's great. Where you're at your best, mm-hmm. Certainly. Wow.
So that's what happened with the story. So the results are not typical.
Now, have you seen the finished product?
Unfortunately.
Okay.
I have.
And were you surprised at the amazing article in the Entertainment Weekly? Because I know ahead of time you were like, I'm going to be in a piece in Entertainment Weekly if you want to pick it up. And then once you saw it, I saw you were tweeting about it a lot more. And so
I really see it.
Yeah. Were you kind of like, maybe it goes under the radar, it's okay? Or?
Well, at first, when Entertainment Weekly, this writer, Clark Collis, who's a senior writer out of New York, he was interested in it because he's fascinated with Uwe. And he told me that Uwe did famously challenge his critics to box him.
Right.
This was years ago. And I guess Clark wanted to do it, but he had to be underneath 200 pounds. So he goes, I spent a summer trying to get under 200 pounds so I could box Uwe.
He was trying. So this writer's trying to cut weight so he can box this director.
Oh, my God.
I love that.
Isn't this great? Like, this stuff really happens. You hear these stories and you're like, you know. And so when he picked up the trailer and then got in touch with me, he was just going to put this article online on EW.com, which would have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's EW. He loved the story so much that I'm telling him of who does this, who takes a very heavy FX-driven film and does it in 30 days, let alone does two.
Right.
He loved it so much that he ended up pitching it to the magazine. And I guess he did tell me, his editor said, you had me at Blubberella.
Yeah.
Because it's a horrible title.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I fought tooth and nail against
it. I was going to ask, what do the activists do about something like this? Like, there could not be a bigger target on a title like that.
Absolutely. Oh, I know that the fat community is going to have their say.
Yeah.
But that's why, when the article came out, though, I could not have asked for more of the article, because that article explains, like, sometimes this happens to actors. Mm-hmm. Like, how many times have we been watching a movie we rented and go, how could this actor be in this film?
Right.
And it's more complicated than that a lot of times. I was already signed on to do this film. It was untitled.
Mm-hmm.
It was an untitled superhero spoof. It's on my script. I can prove it.
Right.
I was in Croatia before I knew he was going to name it this, and I kept saying, no, mm-hmm. you can't name it this. But I also cannot stop the man who's paying me quite a bit of money. I bought a house from this money.
Yeah.
I did stop a lot of the insulting things that he wanted in it. There's a different sense of humor for Eastern Europeans, too.
Sure.
Yeah, there's going to be a target on it. And that's why, at least with this article coming out, the industry people could at least know it was not my intention to make this horribly offensive movie.
Right.
And a lot of it is not. I mean, we kind of try to make, everybody kind of gets made and skewered and made fun of in the film because it's a spoof movie. But I was honest with people and said I wasn't going to sign on for a spoof movie and think that there wasn't going to be a fat joke.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I wrote most of them. Because I felt empowered that if I was writing them, you know, the one about she's a slow moving tornado and she's like a rhinoceros who hasn't been fed for weeks, and my response is Pilates. I mean, that's, you know, hilarious. Like, I'm fine with making, I've always been somebody who makes fun of myself. My friends know that, you guys know that, you know, that's who I am, because life's too short not to have a sense of humor about things. But I kept out the stuff that I thought would be really, really hurtful.
That's important.
Because I do know that the plus size community is very sensitive. They want to see a plus size actor in a role where weight is not mentioned. But you don't even get that on Mike and Molly.
Right.
I mentioned that in to the EW writer. Mm-hmm. Mike and Molly is a groundbreaking comedy that has a beautiful Melissa McCarthy, who I went in for that role, but when she got it, every fat actress who was in for it understood why she got it, because she's Melissa McCarthy and she's wonderful. But the first six episodes of that show were all fat jokes.
Yeah.
And I think that's gotten better.
I hope so. I found it hard to watch because I tried to tune in at first because I'm a fan of her, and just watching it, I was really?
I think Gilmore Girls might have been one of the few shows that she was like a plus size actor was on and they didn't skewer it. But even The Practice, we've talked about, Cameron Manheim, groundbreaking, Emmy winning, but they made fun of her weight on that show.
Absolutely.
If that's like putting a black person in a TV show and acting as though they're not black, or a blind person and acting as though they're being blind isn't an inhibition. I mean, it's, you know, if you don't acknowledge,
yes, but every episode has a joke.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
It's a fine line. I mean, we're progressing so much more than we were, and I say we as in the plus size community, I believe. There's a much more awareness, and there have been more groundbreaking things like Huge, which was on ABC Family, and Mike and Molly. I mean, thank goodness Mike and Molly is a hit. We all said if Mike and Molly was not a success, we would have no roles for 10 years.
That's right.
It just depends, because the doors are getting kicked down slowly, though, because look at even the practice. I mean, I cried when Cameron Mannheim won the Emmy and said, this is for all the fat girls.
Yeah.
And still, though, we're still struggling. I had 8 auditions last year. I'm very open about that.
See, and that's crazy, considering the level of work you do and that your straight offer on so many things, and then 8 auditions.
8 auditions.
Like, and I hope people hear that when we talk about, hey, dreams come true. They can rewrite the role for you. Yeah, but you can also like sit at home and go, where are my auditions?
Absolutely. And I had a long conversation with my agent actually on Friday about this, because I think you have to be realistic. And a lot of actors think, once I hit it, once I get my first role, it's all over, it's done, I'm on my way. And a lot of actors go through lulls.
Let's talk about being an actor at the level where you are getting recognized on the street. There are people who will, you know, yell your name, or if they don't know your name, they know what they know you from, or they figure it out, but you are still not at the level where everything is just roses and go sit on the couch at David Letterman. Like, what is it for the actor who is sort of in between that, hustling to get the first auditions and really being at a sustaining level of a career as a working actor?
There are a lot of us that are in that limbo, that are have gone beyond the co-stars, have gone beyond, I'm looking for an agent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem getting an agent. But there are quite a few of us, and I do feel that you do realize that every actor at a certain level always wants to be at the next level.
Yeah.
I think that it is a reality of the industry that most people don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Clark even put in the article, you know, you're this plus size icon or whatever. And I'm like, I'm still pre-reading sometimes and not going on to producers. And the industry can just be really brutal, that you can have this great resume and it doesn't mean anything. It used to be that you lost out to a name bigger than yourself most of the time,
right,
for big parts. And now I am seeing that these roles are, I'm losing out to a no name too, which is really interesting, or somebody who doesn't have very many credits. Really, I think that the rules have all gone out the window.
That again brings it back to what you were saying with the Wild West, that absolutely we're in a position with the
term.
Lindsay and I actually met in person for the first time 2 years ago on a podcast for Film Method, and we talked about how casting is the Wild West right now, and this of course was in 2009, even more so now, where the rules really are different. There used to be a sort of linear progression that actors could make or could track a little bit, and now that's gone. So what do you do when you are, you know, having those conversations with your agent? Do you strategize, like, let's, you know, push in on different roles that maybe don't describe the character as me? I mean, obviously you've always been put up for roles that aren't necessarily written in the breakdown for you.
Right. The think outside of the box has always been a term that I've dealt with in the 10 years that I've been doing it. I don't think casting directors, though, are bringing in the outside-of-the-box options, though, like they used to. Again, like going back to Joan of Arcadia, myself and 14-year-old boys, because the pressure to have names and cast them so deeply on stuff is really big. But then there's also this weird thing of, I want to discover new talent. So the people in between were really in purgatory, because I'm not a name. I'm not a household name, or, you know, somewhat a little bit, people will say an industry name. There are casting directors who do know me.
You're an industry name, for sure.
But not on producers' lists for new shows and pilots and stuff like that, which if you can be on network lists and studio lists,
fair enough.
You know, I'm not quite there, because I've never been a series regular.
Right.
And that's why I always said, if anybody else was in my position and what I've done so far with not being character, they would have gone on to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But being a character actor is 10 times harder.
Yeah.
Because I've had all these great things happen, but have not quite been able to go to the next level. So why is that? We have to say why, what is the block sort of thing.
So what do you do as an actor here in that position? You keep hustling, you keep at it, you build your relationships, remind people you're here. What strategies do you have for actors at this tier?
At this tier?
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to resign yourself to the fact that it's going to continue to be a struggle, or you get out.
Mm.
It sounds horrible, but you have to really, I think, have an honest conversation with yourself. My problem is, we are deep in a recession. I have no other marketable skills. So, I mean, I was like, am I going to go down to Target and get a job?
Oh, don't do that.
I don't know. I mean, you know, that's the hard thing. I haven't had a real job in 10 years.
That's a really great point. A lot of people probably don't think about that.
They don't.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's really, can I just tell this really great story? Dale Dickey, who just won an Independent Spirit Award for Winter's Bone. She's a phenomenal actress. She's very good friends with my friend Thomas Webb. I'll give him a shout out. Thomas told me that she did, because she's a character actor as well. She's best known for playing Patty, the daytime hooker on My Name is Earl.
Right.
She did several episodes of that. She did this movie, and I know that Jack Nicholson was in it, and there were other names in it. And it was like, she was like the third lead in this film. She came back from doing it, couldn't find work, had to get a job as a valet. Jack Nicholson pulls up.
Oh, no.
You want to talk about one of those moments of, and he goes, we just did a movie together. Uh-huh. And she's parking Jack Nicholson's car. Because I think one thing that's really not talked about are the purgatory actors, is I think the best way, the best term of putting
it. Yeah.
Because I am at a point where I made, you know, money last year, but you start to go through it and you start to go, what's going to happen this year? What if I don't work? I need to have a survival job. And those things happen. I think I remember reading about Eric Balfour, who came to be known on 6 Feet Under.
Yep.
He was still catering, and people were like, you're on 6 Feet Under. And he's like, but I still need a job.
And I think this is important for newer actors to hear, especially because they sort of have an idealized look at what this road is going to be. And they figure, well, hell, if I have this resume, and they look at your credits, they go to your IMDb page, they look at Entertainment Weekly last week and say, well, I got no problems. I got all the work I want.
Exactly. I mean, and I did too 10 years ago. Yeah. Thought that this is fantastic, and I did, you know, 8 guest stars in 1 year. And it's funny, even this article came out, and I was like, oh, I really hope that something will come of it. And my agent is telling me on Friday, not to be negative, but he goes, publicity just isn't what it used to be.
Wow.
Because we are in such a brutal landscape right now.
So it's great for your fan base, but maybe not necessarily means anything to producers.
And that's why we're announcing right here, right now, that Lindsay Hollister is pregnant with Mel Gibson's love
child. Yay! Raise it, Jewish.
I didn't want to tell anyone, but it's twins.
Actually, speaking of your adoring public, we did get a tweeted question here that I want to make sure we ask.
Thank you for tweeting.
Alicia Gore, she wants to know how Steve Carell to work with. We didn't even talk about that credit. Of course, Get Smart, you did a wonderful movie with Steve Carell, and she'd like to know if you have any fun stories from your shoot.
I do. You know, again, though, this is great timing because we're talking about the industry, but it is all about timing because I did do Get Smart, and this great scene with Steve and Annie, and it was a big flashy dance scene. If you've seen the movie, most people remember the dance scene. That movie came out right after the writers strike, 2008. Again, I've really looked back at my career and gone, if this article had come out, I said, if that article had come out 10 years ago, I would have been getting calls off, you know, like crazy. Same thing with Get Smart. It was right after the writers went on strike. That movie made over $200 million internationally. And I only got one audition I can think of that they said, oh, yeah, the producer saw you on Get Smart. It was for Surviving Suburbia, and it was for a 40 to 50-year-old woman.
Oh, my God.
I knew I wasn't getting it. So Get Smart was an amazing experience. And I had, you know, had high, these high hopes it would have done more. But, you know, a lot of people still say that they remember it. And you never know with this business. Sometimes a job can 5 years, 10 years down the line do something for you. So hopefully. But it was a magical shoot. Well, Steve Carell is a monster. And I just want to come
God
clean.
Thank God somebody
I know.
Said it.
I want to come clean here. That's a lie. He's really as genuine and down to earth as you can get. I rehearsed for several weeks before I even met Steve or Anne Hathaway. We had rehearsed at Warner Brothers with the choreographers, but it wasn't until I went up to Montreal that they actually came in. And I think actors would be great because there's probably a lot of future stars and names that are maybe listening, but they do not travel with any entourage. These are two of the biggest names, I think, in the industry.
Certainly.
And they're not surrounded by a bunch of people, which I think is really important. Steve has a stand-in that works for him in the States. The rules are different when you work internationally. You can only bring a certain amount of crew. And he made sure his stand-in could come. You know, I think they said underneath some different, you know, job title so that he could work in Canada. So the guy could, you know, make money, make a living, which I think is admirable. But the best story about Steve, he's very quiet. He is very unassuming, as far away from his character on The Office as you could possibly get.
Sure, yeah.
You don't even know he's in the room, which is interesting. You know, he's not one of those actors that needs to be attention on me all the time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've been with TV stars that are kind of like that. And
I've been with my husband who's kind of like...
Right now he's pointing to himself. I can't look at you. I need to look this way. We had done the scene and they didn't have a lot of time to work on it because Anne and Steve were off doing a lot of other stunts, but we kind of pulled it together. And we were working with over 200 plus extras in the ballroom.
God.
There was a part of it where there's the bitchy girls who, when Steve approaches the group, they think they're talking to him. And but when he asks them to dance, but he's actually talking to me. So in the middle of the dance, they wanted a reaction shot from one of the girls. And they were like featured people, players that had been cast in it. So this one, this story I love, because one of the girls who was supposed to give this reaction shot, I guess just was not giving Peter Siegel, you know, the guys, every movie he's directed makes $100 million. He was very
nice,
as well. I guess he really tried to work with her and it wasn't working. I was like in my own little world, kind of like probably sitting behind Video Village. But then I got up to do the scene when they called me and Steve's in the middle of, we're on set in the middle of this ballroom and everybody's kind of chatting before we shoot. And he goes, he's shaking his head. And he's like, oh man, that's horrible. That's just, and I was like, what happened? what happened? You know, like because he's kind of talking stuff. He goes, oh, Pete's got to replace that girl. And it mattered so much to him that this girl, knowing what this girl must feel like, that she's being replaced, and it really affected him. And I was like, I'll love you forever for that, you know? Because I think it also, Steve found success later in life, mm-hmm. and I think, like, he just knows the struggle. But I think it's a reminder for actors, if you do find success very quickly, it is an industry that will cater to you, and it is an industry that can feed an ego. I do believe you already have. I don't believe that the industry creates a monster, but... seeing an actor like that who has that heart, and he really, really hurt him and really affected him that this girl was being replaced. I love that story. We all went out to dinner together, and for my 30th, they got a whiff that I had turned 30, and we all went out to dinner, and I was sitting next to him, and it was like just such a surreal moment. And you know, he's a family man, loves his kids, and that's just great. Genuine good people. Annie's the same way. Only travels with, like, her brother as her assistant
good
and stuff like that.
All right. Alicia, thank you for the tweeting
thank
question.
Thank you. Sorry, I wish it was juicier awesome. That he, like, beat us or, like Bonnie said, had, like, a cage match
hell
between
yeah.
the
yeah.
extras.
He would, like, pay the extras and the crew to, like, scrap.
To
in
scrap.
The, yeah.
He was just a monster. No, yeah. But he's just wonderful. I wish him all the best now that he's not going to be on The Office
anymore.
It's going
to be interesting,
so.
Isn't it?
It will be interesting. Have they announced who it's going mm-hmm. to replace him yet?
Not yet.
Oh man,
we'll Mel
be
Gibson
sure to cover it on the
list. Oh god,
Mel Gibson's twins that are living inside of me.
See how that works? We're gonna start them young. There's child stars in your belly. Lindsay, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Joining us here on The Work. I really appreciate
it was fun.
You.
And thank you.
Fantastic stories, and excited to see where this takes you. This is a really exciting time, and you
thank
never
you.
Know.
We'll see.
Like
hopefully,
said, yes,
fingers crossed.
That's right. Now, before we wrap things up, I believe we head back over to Ryan for.
We have not really. So the Hollywood Reporter is reporting that Blockbuster is to shut down 186 locations by April.
No, really?
I know, right?
Shocking.
Shocking.
I know.
It's
sad, though.
It's
sad. A sad sign.
I remember when...
I'm going to go back. This is not sad. This is exactly what AJ said last week. I have no pity for people who saw the writing on the wall and said, that doesn't apply to us. I'm not sad at all. I'm sad for the people who are losing their jobs, but the idiots at Blockbuster who failed to see that this was the Wild West, fuck them.
Well, I don't disagree with that. But it's nostalgic for me because I remember when...
Be Kind, Rewind.
Be Kind, Rewind. That little long, narrow sticker
uh-huh.
and the little laminated piece of paper that was your membership card.
I had that.
And when Titanic came out on the double tape VHS.
VHS.
I wanted to call it a DVD, but that's not right.
Beta.
But and my mom insisted that... somebody had to go stand in line at Blockbuster for when it turned midnight and you could buy the double VHS, so my little brother did it. And it was...
How cute.
Yeah, I know. So Blockbuster's a part of our lives, and it shall soon be no more.
But they're regretting all those late fees.
I know, those jerks.
Or regretting not charging
their
more.
Their late fees are ridiculous.
It's crazy.
It's like worse than a library. In other not really news, the Hollywood Reporter is also reporting... But Sylvester Stallone is to launch a menswear line in 2012, and the collection was inspired by the actor's characters in Rambo and Rocky.
Now, this is menswear.
Menswear.
Can we assume maybe there will be underoos for Rambo?
I hope so.
Because I would get those.
Weren't they half naked through both of those films?
That's a really good point.
They didn't wear clothes. I don't...
Well, but...
So menswear line inspired by what? Yeah, like the sweats and the muscle shirts for Rocky to train in, and
ripping up a t-shirt and putting it around your head as a bandana.
I'd buy that.
Okay.
Well,
this is interesting.
Here's a quote. This is from the president of Sly Incorporated. Rocky, at the end of the day, is a love story. And then he goes on to say, while Rambo showcases the other side of masculinity, he's a loner. That's where it comes from. That's
Sly Incorporated. Sly is Sylvester.
So yeah, so that's his company,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I would imagine that's a spokesperson for him.
Yeah. So it's going to be at like mid-range retailers like Macy's. So coming to Macy's in 2012.
See, now that...
Pictures. It's going to have pictures of Sylvester Stallone.
It's going to be right next to Willow Smith's line.
Oh, my hair, my camera.
Oh, my goodness. No, okay.
Wow.
Ow, and on that note.
That kind of sums up the industry.
Yeah.
So that is our Not Really News.
Oh, here we go.
And this has been an arousing?
Arousing.
An arousing edition of The Work.
I like that she leans in when she says that.
Our special arousing guest has been Lindsay Hollister.
Arousing.
Yeah. I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And our host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in for episode 13 of The Work. You can catch us at twitter.com/the_work, as well as podcastingthework.com. Lindsay, if folks want to follow you on Twitter, where would they go to make that happen?
It's L. Hollister, because my name is one letter too long for
crazy.
Twitter.
Crazy!
No, I know. I hate it. So it's L. Hollister.
All right. We'll get you there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good, good. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Truly appreciate it. And everyone listening, till next time, keep creating.